It's early in the morning on October 29th, 2018. 189 tired passengers have boarded the Lion Air Flight 610. The flight is scheduled to depart from Jakarta International Airport, heading towards its destination, Pangal, Pingang. A flight time of only 60 minutes. Just seconds after takeoff, the captain's stick shaker starts violently shaking, causing panic and confusion in the cockpit. Meanwhile, the 189 passengers behind, blissfully unaware, are simply looking forward to arriving at their destination. Minutes into the flight, it was obvious this was not going to be a normal flight for all on board, as the crew struggled to control the multi-million pound jet. Unfortunately, for all on board, their fate was already decided, and just 30 minutes after takeoff, Flight 610 sadly plunged into the Java Sea, killing all on board instantly. Join us as we investigate the deadliest Boeing 737 MAX accident to date and explore the crash of Lion Air's Flight 610. Hello listeners, welcome to the Flight Files. My name is Tom and I'm joined today by my co-host Dan.
Hi, how's everyone doing?
Yeah, my name is Tom and yeah, like I said, me and Dan today are going to be looking to uncover technical failures, the human errors, and possibly regulatory lapses behind the unfortunate fate of Lion Air 610.
Yeah, so like you said in the intro, the 737 MAX is quite a controversial topic at the moment, and we'll get more into that later, but we just want to welcome you to the Flight Files. This is the first episode, the debut episode of the podcast. Myself and Tom are aviation enthusiasts. We're not pilots. So take everything that we say with a bit of, you know, a bit of lax. Give us a bit of understanding. We're just enthusiasts. We're not actual pilots or anything to do with aviation. But just to give a structure of how the podcast is going to work, every other week we'll have a different host. So this week it's Tom, next week it'll be me, and we'll alternate and bring different flights that are interesting to you to listen to, and the aim is for either of us to not know what the flight is so we can ask questions and speculate and see if, you know, we can figure out what's going on with the flight. But I'll let you take it away, Tom. Did you have a bit of background on Lion Air 610?
Yeah, no problem. So, Lion Air, if you don't know, they are based in Jakarta, Indonesia. Now, I'm sort of pretty good at geography, I would say, but I wasn't quite aware of how big Indonesia is, just so if anyone doesn't know. Indonesia is quite a large country or group of islands in the South Asia. It is in Southeast Asia, I believe, between the Indian and Pacific Oceans. And quite surprised to me, it consists of over 17,000 islands. I don't know if you knew that, Dan.
I didn't. That's a lot of separated land to call a country.
Yeah. And just as a reference, from the UK, it would take you about 16, 17 hours to get there with a short stopover. So it's pretty far away.
Yeah, so one of the longer flights in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Lion Air themselves, they're the country's largest privately run airline and the second largest low-cost airline in Southeast Asia. So they're the sort of Ryanair of Indonesia, if you would.
Okay.
So yeah, they operate these flights multiple times a day, different areas. And the 737 MAX at the time of the incident had about 800 hours in service. So it was brand new, delivered only a couple months previous. 895 hours in service, exactly. And it had done 443 cycles, so cycle is a takeoff and a landing. So it was, yeah, very, very new plane. Not much technically wrong with it, but we'll obviously find out in a bit.
Yeah, at the time, was a quite advanced aircraft, would you say?
Yeah, 100%. So the if you've ever flown any sort of short-haul flights before, you've probably been on a 737 or an A320. But essentially what happened is Airbus obviously wanted to improve efficiency of their aircraft and get more people on using less fuel. So they came up with a new proposal, a new aircraft, which was the Neo.
Yeah.
And sort of started taking lots of orders from American airlines, which Boeing didn't like the sound of. So they needed to, as most companies do, you know, put a competitor in. So they came up with this MAX aircraft, but as the aviation industry is so regulated and so sort of strict, they wanted to do this without spending too much money, doing it as easily as they could.
Yeah.
Which we're going to find out has sort of grim consequences at the end of it.
Yeah. There's a very big difference between Airbus and Boeing. Airbus being I'm pretty sure wholly owned by government agencies around Europe. And Boeing obviously being a private company and having quite a rich history initially with the phrase, if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going, being like super popular. But now I think it's starting to feel like the opposite is a bit true. Although, like, aviation is it's the safest form of transport, and 99% of the planes in the air are safe, including all the Boeing planes. This is just an unfortunate series of events over the years, and including now.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, these are, again, these podcasts are not to sort of put you off flying, or we're not trying to sort of benefit from the misfortune of others. This is,
it's purely educational.
Yeah, educational. We're just interested in what went on, sort of analysing the facts. And
yeah, it's really interesting to just see like what comes of these incidents, because not all of them have fatalities. Like, some of them just have crashes and everyone survives. But the learnings and the regulations that come into place because of these incidents are really interesting, and it's one of the only like mutually agreed, regulated forms of transport in the world. So it's all designed to make aviation safer,
yeah,
long term. And yeah, in the future, we'll delve into some of the earlier flights and some of the first incidents, because they're really interesting as how they managed to really shape the way of aviation. But let's go back. Let's go back to the Lion Air flight.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, as I mentioned, the flight was a short hop flight, basically, from Jakarta to Pangal Pinang. Again, hopefully I'm saying that right. There were 181 passengers, 8 crew. And yeah, the flight was only a 60-minute hop, basically. The flight crew was very experienced, so the captain was Bavier Sunesha, I believe that's how it's said. He was 31 years old, he was an Indian national, and he had flown with the airline for more than 7 years, accumulating just over 6,000 hours of flight experience, 5,200 of which were on the 737. And his co-pilot, Harvino, was 41 years old. He had over 5,000 hours of flight experience, with 4,200 of them being on the 737 as well. So both very familiar with the 737.
Yeah, and he would have been the first officer, right, Harvino?
Yes, he was the first officer, yeah. So yeah, the 737 and the MAX, basically identical planes, designed that way so that training was kept minimal. But again, we'll see what sort of effect that has. So we're just going to use a few common terms if you're not too sort of aware of the aviation industry too much. So going to be talking about angle of attack. I just wanted to give a quick explanation of what that is. So it's essentially the angle between the oncoming wind and the plane's wings. If you can picture that, it'll sort of make this picture a little bit, make that a bit more sense. But again, we'll talk about it later on. Trim essentially takes a really, really simple way of saying it is it takes the weight off the yoke, the flight control for the pilot, and it allows them to sort of maintain a climb or maintain level flight while the plane is flying, essentially. And MCAS, which is the big one for this flight and the MAX. MCAS stands for Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. And essentially, it is an automated feature on the MAX designed to make it handle similarly to its predecessor, which would be the 737NG or next generation. So basically, the design feature of the MAX meant that it had larger engines for better efficiency, and they were placed further forward. I believe they were placed further forward because they were larger. They couldn't fit under the wings because the nose wheel on the on the 737 is quite small.
Okay.
So they had to actually move the engines forward. So that changed the aerodynamic sort of property of the plane itself, and it would cause the nose of the plane to rise more than the predecessor plane would.
Yeah, and so that would have been why MCAS was introduced into the MAX?
That was why MCAS, yeah. So MCAS is essentially an anti-stall system.
Okay.
So because the nose rises uncontrollably.
Yeah.
The basically, if the sensors on the nose of the plane detect a high angle of attack, so the nose is pitched up too much, MCAS automatically brings the nose down without the pilots having to do anything.
Okay.
Counteracts the lift and prevents a stall.
And is that in addition to the anti-stall protections where the yoke would shake if you didn't stall?
The stick shaker is just that's just a normal feature.
Yes.
That's already on the plane, yeah. Background. So the background to this incident was quite interesting. Several days before, the left side angle attack sensor was showing spurious readings. This was reported at maintenance, actually replaced it a day before the accident flight.
Just a day?
A day before. And even more chilling, the previous flight crew, before the crash, so on the flight to Jakarta, experienced similar issues that the crash flight had. We'll get into those issues later.
So there was already known issues with the previous flight crew.
There was already known issues, yeah. So on that, I mean, I can probably better if I say it now, actually. On the flight before, the airspeed and altimeters failed on the captain's side. So the captain's and the first officer's instruments for airspeed and altitude started reading differently. This caused the captain's stick shaker to go off because the plane thought that it was stalling.
Okay.
It didn't know its airspeed and it didn't know how high it was. So because of the takeoff, because it was just after takeoff, the plane thought it was stalling. So MCAS, to prevent this, started pitching the nose of the aircraft down without the pilots doing it. And this obviously caused a dive. Luckily, though, on the previous flight, they had a third pilot in the jump seat, so just behind the two pilots. He was just hitching a ride, and he noticed the trim wheel, which is the big wheel in between both seats. If you're familiar with the cockpit, you'll know what I'm talking about. It was spinning. It's a big motorized wheel, and it spins when the aircraft is being trimmed. So he noticed that this was spinning without the pilots doing anything. So he knew that the aircraft was pitching itself down rather than the pilots.
Was there any reason why the third pilot was in the cockpit, or was it just a normal jump seat?
I think he was just jump seating, yeah, from what I read, yeah.
Because this was a fairly recent flight, 6 years ago now? Whereas, back in the day, three people in the cockpit was normal with the flight engineers.
Yeah, quite right.
So just wondering
until they were replaced.
Yeah, just wondering if there was any reason why they were there other than just jump seating.
I believe he was just hitching a ride back to maybe his base airport or this event happened. Fortunately the crew of this flight took actions to follow a runaway stabilizer checklist, and they set the auto trim switches to cut out. This basically disabled the plane from trimming itself automatically. And they didn't nosedive anymore. Interestingly though, two interesting facts here, which are quite chilling again. The pilot monitoring, so the one on the radios, actually issued a pan call to ATC for these problems. So not an emergency, but one below.
Okay.
And they kept flying to Jakarta with the faulty sensors on the one side. The issues were reported to maintenance, but the captain said nothing about the stabilizer control problems. He only said that they had angle of attack and airspeed problems. He didn't mention anything about the plane nosediving. So I just wanted to know what your thought on that is.
So there was no mention at all of what the actual problem was. Obviously the airspeed and angle of attack problems are big, but the stabilizer being out of control was the fix. That doesn't seem very good.
No. So I have no idea why he didn't mention the fact that the plane tried nosediving itself multiple times. Possibly because they fixed it with the auto trim, but...
Yeah, maybe they sort of linked some of the issues together and assumed that the trim doing its thing wasn't like the actual issue.
Yeah,
obviously it was the issue, but...
Yeah, it's quite interesting though. So this leads to this MCAS being a sort of hidden danger in the MAX.
Yeah, and this
hidden
is just
even more
purely sensors that is...
Yeah, this is sensors and software. Yeah, so instead of changing the aerodynamical design of the aircraft, Boeing essentially put a bit of software in to allow them to fit those larger engines, make the plane more efficient, etc.
Right.
This wasn't... this didn't need regulatory sort of intervention, big approvals, I didn't think.
I see.
Which is why it was sort of snuck under the mat.
Is that why
snuck
there was
under
no
the mat for pilots as well?
Yeah, I was going to say, is that why there was no training? Because you mentioned earlier that there was no need to be like retrained.
No need at all.
Right.
So
that doesn't seem great for Boeing.
No, it's it's a lot of sort of, I don't know if you've heard of the Swiss cheese effect, sort of a lot of holes in the Swiss cheese lining up. Each of these, if you picture a block of Swiss cheese, some slices, all the holes in it, once they line up, that end sort of result, that hole, all those cheeses lined up, you get a bad incident.
Yeah.
So, we'll head on to the actual incident now. So, as I said, it was a morning flight. The plane was full. It was at full capacity. It had 189 of 189 people on board. And yeah, taxi to the runway. Everything's normal. Takeoff, everything normal. But as soon as they actually lift off the ground, a few seconds later, the captain's stick shaker goes off again, as it did in the previous flight. Obviously, this is totally unexpected to the flight crew. It's not something they deal with every day. So you would have had some sort of shock factor, I imagine.
Yeah.
I would definitely be shocked. But they are trained for this. Trained to handle these situations, sort of fault finds. They've got... you know, one pilot does one thing, the other does the other.
Yeah, both have separate roles.
Yeah. Crew resource management, that was the word. So they're trained.
Yeah.
Trained to handle these situations. So, yeah. The captain's stick shaker is going, so his yoke in front of him is vibrating violently as he's trying to control the plane. Obviously, a bit of panic in the cockpit. So, again, this angle of attack sensor, the same one on the captain's side, is faulty. It's showing spurious readings between the captains and the first officers. And the plane, again, thinks it's in a stall. So,
trying to solve that is tricky.
Yeah, they're trying to... Is the plane stalling? Are they going to sort of drop out the sky?
Or yeah, because that is would it, inform... They're working with different information as well, so they wouldn't be able to really come... I can imagine if being in that situation, you wouldn't be able to come to a conclusion on what's actually happening if your data isn't aligned.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've just taken off, and the plane says, I'm going to fall out of the sky. So, yeah, again, panic, sort of confusion in the cockpit, what's going on. At this point, the passengers in the back probably know... Not aware of what's going on in the cockpit in front of them.
Yeah, that must have been awful.
Which is quite a horrible thought, really.
Do you know how high up and how low down they were going each time? Is that something that was available?
I think it was sort of 500 to 1,000 feet, sort of up and downs when MCAS started sort of taking over.
That's quite significant.
Yeah, so so the captain obviously sort of takes a step back and sort of asks the first officer to contact ATC, asking for a hold so they can sort of troubleshoot the problem because something's not right.
Yeah.
While doing this, the plane pitches up and down around 30 times. From the flight data recorder.
They're on a roller coaster then.
So it is a roller coaster. Yeah, I would imagine the passengers at this point are starting to, you know, panic.
Yeah.
Definitely something's not right. Again, neither pilot's sort of seen the issue that the previous flight had with this stabilizer. Neither sort of thought to stop the trimming. So they would have, because the plane was pitching down, they would have tried obviously pulling back on their yoke to get the nose up.
Yeah.
But as they did this...
The shaker would... That's what your instinct would be if the shaker was going off.
Yeah, so if the shaker was going off, you would... actually, to be fair, in a stall situation, you would... push the nose down to gain some speed. That's what MCAS is doing. So MCAS would be pushing the nose down to try and gain some some speed.
Right.
But obviously the pilots want to counteract this by putting the aircraft up because they don't want it to go into the ocean. So that's where this sort of badly made system has a negative impact. Yeah, so the 737 that they're used to, the you know, the one they've got thousands of hours of flight on,
yeah,
when they trimmed manually, they would override whatever the computer was telling them. So if they trimmed for the nose to come up, the nose would come up and it would stay up. Whereas on the MAX, this MCAS system's been introduced to obviously counteract the effect that the new engines have, and the pilots can still override it, but it would cut back in a few seconds later. So they'd get a brief bit of respite where they climb a little bit, and then again, it still thinks it's stalling, so it nosedives you.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this sort of back and forth became a losing battle to the pilots, and the trim became too much on the MCAS system that it essentially nosed down the plane while the pilots couldn't do anything. They couldn't pull up, they couldn't trim up. They were just flat down in a nosedive down towards the ocean at 400 yeah. miles an hour.
400 miles an hour.
So, yeah. 13 minutes into the flight after takeoff, they nosedived into the sea, killing everyone on board instantly. 6:30 in the morning. They lost, ATC lost contact with the flight. So, yeah. Not very nice to think of. But, a lot to sort of go at investigation-wise, why what went so wrong that this plane thought it was in this dire situation when it really wasn't. There was nothing wrong with it. It was a brand new plane. And sort of how did this software get introduced that has taken the lives of 189 people?
Yeah.
So yeah, we can sort of look into the investigation and aftermath.
So I have a prediction.
Unless you've got any questions.
I have a prediction on what I think went wrong.
Okay.
So I'm vaguely familiar with the issues of this flight, but not enough to know what happened.
Yeah.
And why it happened. I know what happened. I didn't know why it happened. I think the sensors that were replaced, or there was the one sensor that was replaced on the previous flight.
Yep.
I think due to there's a faulty sensor, that same sensor that was replaced was faulty. And I think there might have been a software issue too.
Yep. Yeah, you're not far off. What do you sort of think of that 30 minutes that, you know, the pilots had? Do you think they could have... I know we're sort of backseating. It's not our place, you know, in this sort of moment. No one knows what they would do, but how do you sort of think they felt?
I think you're dealing with a plethora of different issues there. You know, you're pitching up and down, what was it, around 30 times, you said?
Yep.
And the plane's telling you to nosedive, but you can clearly tell that you don't need to nosedive.
Yep.
I don't know if you, especially if that wasn't a system you're familiar with on board, if, you know, I'm wondering if in the investigation section that's coming up, you'll mention it if there was anything about documentation given to the pilots of the 737 MAX, or if it was just sneaked onto the plane. Because I think without training and knowing what's going on, your instinct is to just fight the auto trim as you would if it was happening on the 737.
Yeah, just fight what's happening with you straight away.
Yeah, because they're only working with the information they have. So if they don't, if they're not aware of the MCAS system, then I would say that I don't think there's any. Yeah, I mean, obviously the prevention could be Boeing not pushing this through.
Yeah.
You know, unregulated or loosely regulated. But I think if you're not aware of it, it would be nearly impossible. And the only reason that the flight before it wasn't a tragedy in itself was because there was a third pilot happened to be jump seating on board.
Yeah, that extra set of eyes sort of made the difference for that crew.
Especially because the jump seat is a bit behind as well, so they have a more of a wider view of the cockpit as opposed to, you know, what's directly in front of them. Instead of off to their, well, first officer would be the left, and it'd be sort of like for the captain, like lower right, so.
That jump seat guy, obviously, or female, I'm not sure if they were male or female, but I guess they sort of felt like they weren't working. Do you know what I mean? That sort of feeling. But yeah, no, you're on the right lines, Dan, to be fair. But yeah, obviously the investigation started straight away. I think it took a couple hours for them to get out to the wreckage. I think it was near an oil rig. I think oil rig workers seen the plane actually crash into the ocean.
Okay.
So yeah, it took about 3 days for them to find the flight data recorder. 115 and feet.
Known as the black box, right?
That's the black box, yeah.
Yeah.
The black box, which is orange.
Oh, I suppose easily identifiable in a crash.
Yeah.
I suppose black would be like nearly impossible to find. Especially, you know.
Especially deep in the ocean.
Yeah, or if you crash in like a woods or a forest, pretty sure that'd blend in a fair bit more than the orange. That's why life jackets are orange.
Exactly. So you could be spotted. So yeah, they managed to find out, which is huge for investigations. And that the data they found had the previous 18 flights and the incident flight all recorded on it, and the data that it collects is, you know, sort of 1800 parameters from the plane's sensors, so you can imagine how much information that box gives investigators. Yeah. It's absolutely massive.
So it's why it's crucial to find it.
Yeah, definitely. So I think straight away, you know, the first couple of weeks of the investigation, I'm not entirely sure, but they seen that there was a discrepancy between the angle of attack sensors. So the left, which is the captain's, was actually 21 degrees off from the first officer's.
What? So
plane thought it was pitching up 21 degrees more on the captain's side.
So what do you mean by that? Like the readings were wrong, or the actual sensor was 21 degrees like angled on the plane itself?
The reading.
Oh, okay.
So it would have been in the same position as the other one, I imagine. But it was reading 21. So what they believe happened is that the sensor was actually improperly calibrated before it was installed in Jakarta.
And is this the new one that they replaced?
That was the new one, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, another bit of cheese in the whole Swiss cheese mythology. But you know, there were other factors that come into play. The MCAS itself had several flaws. So they'd actually had a single point of failure, which is extremely uncommon for aviation.
There's always redundancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a backup, and in case of aviation, a backup of the backup is very common. Whereas this system, it had single point. It didn't have any redundancy in it. So if either one of those sensors failed, it would cause the system to cause the MCAS system to not work as it should. So there is a reason why it didn't have redundancy, we believe. It's because Boeing said that it wasn't important enough to have redundancy. And this might be due to the fact that it would require approval from the FAA if it was deemed to be such a critical system.
Yeah.
The tape they would have to go through would be much more than them just saying that it's just, you know, this basic system that only prevents this from happening.
Yeah, and they would have to train the pilots as well.
Yeah, they would have to train pilots. It would cost them a lot more money,
yeah,
a lot more effort. So there's that. I think that's quite a big point, the single point failure.
Yeah.
As you've mentioned, the pilots weren't fully informed about MCAS.
Oh, so that was it. They weren't told fully about what it was.
Yeah. So yeah, this system was sort of snuck in under the radar. Not really trained on the existence of the system itself. So these pilots were flying the plane, not even knowing that that system was doing stuff. They didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
Because, like I just said, Boeing didn't deem it important enough or needed enough for pilots to know about it, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, it's negligent.
I definitely think it's negligent, yeah. It's corporate issues getting in the way of people's safety.
Yeah.
And I think it's hit them quite hard. I think if they could, get in a time machine and take the clock back, I reckon they'd probably train people on what the system is. But that's, that's something we can talk about later, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the investigation in a nutshell. Essentially, MCAS drove the plane into the ocean. It was a software malfunction that the pilots had no control over, apart from using the switches to cut out the auto trim.
Now, yeah,
this just was not known to the pilots. The problem didn't show itself as a runaway stabilizer problem in the moment. And as I said previously, the older 737 operated differently. When they manually trimmed, it sort of stopped the auto trim from doing its thing. So that's why they thought when they were trimming, they would have naturally trimmed and expected the plane just to sort of level off, but it kept nosediving.
Yeah, I remember hearing somewhere about that MCAS system in particular, like, although the plane was airborne for 13 minutes, they had like a very small window of time to actually address the issue.
Yep.
So I can't remember what the exact number was, but less than like a minute, I'm pretty sure, is what I remember hearing, which is an insane amount of time to address a pretty critical issue.
Yeah, you've got all these buttons and switches and stuff in front of you. You've got almost 200 people behind you. And, time, I can imagine time goes very, very quickly in those moments.
Yeah.
Trying to juggle all those things. And yeah, I think that's when the training and all that comes into play. But unfortunately for this flight, I just didn't think fate was on their side.
No.
So interestingly, just a quick pointer. Between November 2018 and January 2019, investigators discovered MCAS's role in the crash, and Boeing actually acknowledged the issue and sent out a software update for the 737 MAX for all aircraft. 3 months later, however, another MAX crashed in Ethiopia due to similar MCAS system failures, and that killed 157 people.
Oh, wow. So that's like over 300 people who lost their lives for a system failure.
Yep. So Boeing acknowledged it. They issued a software update, and again, the plane crashed and killed almost 160 people. So at that point, the 3 days after that crash, the FAA grounded all MAX aircraft all over the world. Countries followed suit. And then in June of the same year, 2019, Boeing redesigned the system. So they tried sneaking it through. Two planes crashed, killing, like you said, over 300 people. And, you know, a couple of years later, they redesigned it because obviously it was not fit for purpose. It had flaws, putting people's lives at risk. So, just a discussion now, Dan, I guess. What are your sort of feelings on it? How do you think Boeing handled it?
So I'm surprised that a new aircraft can be brought in without any like regulation of all of its systems. Like, I understand that it's just sort of like a new model of the 737, but it is in practice an entirely new aircraft with, in, you know, potentially the engines, like you said, moved to the front, a little closer to the front. So, you know, there's already design changes, so you would think that the whole aircraft would have to be regulated and everything would have to be signed off. But clearly in this case, it wasn't. But are the regulatory issues and processes done by just one institute? Like, would they just have to go through the FAA and then, or would they have to get everything approved through every aviation like agency?
Quite possibly, yeah, I know what you mean, sort of globally.
Because I can understand why.
Because of Boeing, I don't know if maybe it's because they're American.
Yeah, like if the FAA sign off on it, do they have like a... Because there's, you know, like some airlines operate together. So like a British Airways flight can be an American Airways flight. You know, so is it like if the FAA sign off on it, everyone else is okay with it because they all have like an agreement? That makes the most sense because of why submitting to every single agency.
Yeah, it must be that.
Yeah. So I can get why. You know, I suppose the FAA also plays a role in it. But it's good that they fixed it, I guess. You know, it's sad that it took over 300 people, but at least they fixed the problem.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I completely agree with what you're saying. Boeing have essentially made a completely new aircraft. Found a loophole that saved them a lot of time and a lot of money. Which, if you know, sort of looking at both sides of the fence, you can understand from a business perspective, but you've also got your business's reputation and sort of outlook on the line. Maybe they were risking that. Well, obviously they were risking that.
Yeah.
Because they had these two incidents with the same system.
I think it's interesting if you think of like a comparison to the motor industry and Boeing and Airbus being the predominant players in commercial aviation, and how any sort of crash is really publicized and talked about, but it doesn't really follow suit in the motor industry. Like, I suppose if a Tesla has a crash because of its autopilot, it's talked about because Tesla's a new company and it's electric car hate and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, self-driving, even though planes pilot themselves with, you know, those systems. Not similar systems, obviously, but they pilot themselves for the most part. But the comparison I find always quite interesting, that they would even risk that, knowing that they are one of a few in the aviation industry, and a lot of people can just go, yeah, we're not going to buy your planes anymore because they're not safe.
Yeah, 100% agree. That's a good point, actually.
I do think there's an unfair comparison between Boeing and Airbus, not because Boeing do anything differently, it's just the owners of Airbus they're already regulated themselves, on top of having to get everything through regulations anyway, because the government agency is going to be a lot more cautious with their money than Boeing, who has shareholders.
Yeah, 100%. I haven't thought of it that way, actually. Yeah, being private, I guess they're trying to, like you said, make their shareholders happy. Their shareholders are saying Airbus have just released this brand new aircraft, which is, you know, 15% more efficient. You can get 20 more people on board. What are you going to do? How are we going to compete?
Yeah, it's tricky. It's, you know, the value of a company versus the value of the lives on board. And, you know, it was those two incidents, the only two incidents from the MCAS systems?
That took lives, I believe, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, you have two incidents that caused those entire planes to be grounded for however long, and it's not really worth the gamble. So, no. You know, I'm not sure if they've learned, because recent news would say otherwise.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's really interesting seeing the differences between how Airbus operate, and to my knowledge, Airbus haven't had a system like this that has caused tragedies like this. But I suppose doing research on a bunch of these flights that we'll cover, we might stumble across something.
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. Yeah, like you said, the recent events of the MAX again, bringing it further into the spotlight. Is this it, or is there more? You'd hope there's not more.
Yeah. Like, what else are they trying to sneak through? That, you know, they only happened to discover that some of the bolts, was it, that were in the wrong position on some of the planes? Like, what else is there that is just, oh, it's not a big system, so it's fine. Like, you know, we don't need to retrain pilots. Is it, you know, will there be another MCAS situation?
That what if?
Yeah.
That might put a few people off, definitely.
Yeah. But to reiterate, if you've made it all the way to the end, aviation is the safest form of transport. Like, you are more likely to have an incident in the car on the way to the airport than you are on the plane. So don't be fearful about getting on that flight to your next holiday.
Definitely.
It's absolutely the safest method of transportation, and if you do see that you're flying on a Boeing, like, don't panic. It's more than almost guaranteed that that plane will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, definitely. Again, this was a chain of events that all linked up perfectly that unfortunately ended up in tragic loss of people's lives. You know, if any one of those incidents, any one of those events sort of hadn't happened, the sensor had been calibrated, for example, that would have stopped there and everything would have been sort of normal. But it's the lining up of those events that sort of set the fate, unfortunately.
Yeah, just a few sort of, I guess, dominoes. It's the domino effect.
Dominoes, definitely, yeah.
It's just the chain reaction of a few poor decisions that led to this.
Yeah.
But that was really interesting, because like I said earlier, I've heard of this flight, but I didn't know the exact reasoning as to why it failed. So I'm glad my guess was right.
Yeah, no, you were pretty spot on, to be fair. I did have a last quick question. Have you ever been on a 737?
I'm not sure is the answer. It's only recently that I've started checking what plane I'm going on, just out of curiosity. The likelihood is that in my younger years, I probably have. But
yeah, probably.
I think in the past, 5 years, I haven't. So I think it's all been Airbus.
Oh, team Airbus.
It depends.
Are you team Airbus or are you team Boeing?
I do like an Airbus, to be honest. For those of you who don't know, me and Tom, we do flight sim stuff as well. And for me, my favorite plane is the 320neo at the moment. So I'm slightly more leaning towards the Airbus. But I do appreciate the Boeing planes. I don't like flying the 747 in flight sim. But that's a personal thing. Getting on a bit of a tangent here. Those damn trims.
Yeah, the old trim in the 747, yeah. I would completely unrelated to this, I would definitely say I'm a Airbus man. I just sort of just like the way they do stuff. Again, purely from flight sim experience. No actual feeling of the plane, but yeah. Airbus all the way.
Thank you, everyone, for... I was going to say watching, then. I'm so used to making videos. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the first episode of The Flight Files. That's what we're calling it. We will get more accustomed to doing podcasts as we go on. So please bear with us as we feel our way through how to structure these and the pacing and everything like that. But we appreciate anyone who's listened to the end. That's very nice of you.
Definitely.
We are in the process as well of setting up some socials, so we will start promoting those as we go through the later episodes. The socials will just post sort of supplemental information. So for this flight, Tom has found the flight path. So we'll post stuff like that so that you can sort of get a better understanding of some of the things that we're talking about, because podcasts aren't visual.
No, yeah, I agree. Just as a closing remark, I'd like to say thank you for being a good listener, Dan.
You're welcome. It's been some, very interesting.
Good questions, some good points out there. And I definitely look forward to hearing your story next time. Wonder if I've heard of it. I might not have. But yeah.
Maybe. There's a lot of incidents out there, so... It's likely that most episodes we're not going to have heard the other one, which is good.
No.
But, yeah, thank you everyone for listening, and we will be releasing episodes weekly. So follow, subscribe on whatever platform you get your podcasts on.
William, thank you very much.